This is Mel Rojas Jr. You're listening to H10, Hanshin Tigers English News.
You're listening to H10, Hanshin Tigers English News, where your passion for the first place Hanshin Tigers knows no limits. Today is Tuesday, September the 21st. And this is the latest in the season that I have ever been following a first place Hanshin Tigers team. This is episode 135, by the way, and I am the host of H10, T-Ray. Yes, we are still in first place. How are you feeling about that, my boy Sanjay? How's it going?
Aloha, brother T-Ray. I am feeling fine and dandy that we're still in first place, even though we're still, you know, we're hanging on by... I don't know what we're hanging on by. Not much.
We're hanging on by a replica jersey thread or something like that. Yeah, not really sure. But we're coming down to the end. We're down to fewer than 30 games left on tap. At this time of year, usually there's fewer than 10 games left in the schedule. So I guess in all fairness, 2015 is still the deepest end of the season that I experienced a first place Hanshin Tigers team. However, I think that this year's team is much stronger than that year's team. Interestingly, in that year also, it was the Swallows and the Giants that were the main competition. And sadly, in that season, the Swallows won the pennant, the Giants finished second, and we finished third. Let it not happen again. It won't. Trust me, it ain't going to happen. We are too good to let that happen again.
Hear, hear.
So we've got a great show for you today as we talk about who is on their way out at the end of 2021. And the reason we're doing that is because the announcements are starting to come in and we want to be on the cutting edge of that. And we want to say, I told you so, or whoa, where'd that come from? As opposed to just reflecting on it later. So that's what we're talking about later in the show. Strap in though, and join us for the great ride. It is time for the Rumors and News.
Rumors and News. Rumors and News.
We're going to start this segment, as we always do, with the import players. And my man, I'm almost not tired of talking about Chen, but I've got nothing to say because there's still no news on that guy. So just like we said last time, we're just going to assume that he's done for the season.
Yep.
The farm is down to 6 games. He's probably not getting into any of those. If he's not getting into farm action, how is he going to be expected to come back for anything in the regular season? So let's put a ribbon on him. And we'll see if he's back next season. But even the next show, we are going to scrap him from this segment. But let's talk about the other two pitchers that are down on the farm right now. John Edwards, so far this season on the farm, fairly solid, not lights out or anything, but 33 innings pitched, 33 strikeouts, a 3.00 ERA. He's got that lucky number 3 going, and his whip is right around 1. It's like 1.02 or something like that. It's fairly low. And then Raul Alcantara, who has been down there for much shorter time, has only made it into 6 games, but he's thrown 14 innings of ball, struck out 10, and has yet to allow a run, and has got a whip of 0.79. So he's looking pretty good. And I think if we need somebody coming out the bullpen or an emergency starter, he could very well be the man.
Mm-hmm. Those are pretty impressive numbers.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, it just goes to show... you know, we could talk about the gap between Korean ball and Japanese ball. You know, he dominated not to the 0.00 ERA extent in Korea, but he did quite well there. And then he wasn't terrible for us on the top squad either. It was just a matter of, again, it's the import limitation and trying to, you know, make the pieces of the puzzle fit, which is really hard. So let's keep things on the farm for a little bit longer. We've got a couple of players that we want to talk about there. One of those being Shintaro Fujinami. Of course, we love to talk about him. So I think the last time we're just bouncing back and forth. You know, I could take the clip from a month ago and talk about that, right? So he was on the top squad and he got farmed. That was from episode 133, possibly. Well, it happened again. He got farmed on the 10th of September, and you'll hear about his outing on the top squad in the recap section. But once again on the farm, and again, go back to 133 and you'll hear the same thing. On the 16th of September against the Hawks, he went 6 innings pitched, 4 hits against, 1 walk, 1 hit batter, 1 run against, and 11 strikeouts. So just lightning in a bottle down on the farm. What is going on with this guy? How is he so good and dominant there and then so shaky on the top squad? It is definitely not a gap in talent. He's not Ichitengo Gun. He's not a 1.5. He's not between top squad and farm as far as ability, right?
I agree 100% on that front. But man, so what is, can we like get him hypnotized into thinking that he's pitching on a farm when he's actually pitching on the top team?
Give him like some virtual glasses so that everything around him looks like Naru Ohama instead of Koshien or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Something like that.
I don't know. I don't know what it is. Yeah, it's interesting. So getting back down to the farm though, unfortunately, our superstar rookie was sent down to the farm on the same day as Shin-chan because he was in a dry spell of, I think it was 0 for 35, if not 36. And he didn't have a super start on the farm, but he has had a couple of good games. I think his last two have been multi-hit, including a 4 for 4 on Sunday the 19th with three RBIs. I think he had two doubles and two singles. One of those doubles was really close to being a home run. So he is looking good down there, and hopefully he will look good on the top squad. And here's a little something for you. One of our outfielders, Dan Onodera, got farmed yesterday on our day off, and they usually do that so that they can bring him up as quick as possible, and they don't call a guy up until the day of our game. And so today they're probably going to call up an outfielder in his place. Could it be the man who is already in Nagoya playing on the farm, Sato, who would get called up and just stay in Nagoya for the top squad?
Well, interestingly, just a few minutes before we hit record on this one, I happened to read an article online, sanspo.com actually, which is saying that Sato is going to stick with the team as they go to Hiroshima.
The farm
and,
team.
Sorry?
The farm team, you're saying?
The stick with the farm team, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Which is going to Hiroshima next, I believe, in Uji. Mm-hmm. And the idea was that there were a number of things that were mentioned. One was that he had been told that he needed to improve his fielding, and he was on board with that, and that he needed to think more while he was fielding, because standing in the outfield, you're not as involved as you are in the infield. And he thought it had a negative impact on his hitting as well, as did the coaches. And also to have the experience of actually doing do-age for his manager Hirata on the farm team first as a practice run for the real thing on the top team for Yano-san. So
there's your Kansai like media fantasizing right there, right? So yeah. Of course, let's then jump into kind of that next thing, and that is that the farm team had an 18 game winning streak, which is a record for farm baseball. It ended on the 15th of September against the Hawks, but they bounced back the next day thanks to Fujinami and Juan. Anyhow, they are now in first place, a game and a half, only a game and a half ahead of the Hawks, but the season is winding down. We have got six games left on the farm, three of those in Hiroshima, as you said, and our magic number right now is four. So right. There's a decent chance that we are going to clinch that Western League title. It's not in the bag because SoftBank is SoftBank. And I think they have more games left than we do. But anyhow, hopefully we will be able to do that. And so then if Sato can be part of that in Hiroshima, if they can wrap it up real quick, then yeah, he can come up and he can be part of the festivities here. But the fantasy of these Kansai media, right, to write stuff like this, it's the
there you go,
where Sato in his rookie year gets to do both. Well, let's make it happen. Let's see it happen. So then the question is, if Sato doesn't get called up to replace Onodera, who is it going to be? My guess then would be it might be Yutaro Itayama, who has been swinging the hot bat down there. I think he's upwards of around 270, which is not absolutely outstanding, but considering that he was in the low 200s for much of the year, it means that lately he's been quite good. And lastly, we're going to talk about some injuries. And so we'll just repeat the one with Kota Inoue, who is still out, which means that our young prodigy is probably going to have to wait until 2022 to do any damage on the top squad. But a couple of new injuries to report, unfortunately. The first one is Yuki Nishi, who was deactivated on the 14th of September, which means he's eligible to be reactivated for this weekend against the Giants. Could happen. We're not really sure. But he had some discomfort in his neck just from how he slept. I'm assuming the 13th or the 12th, whatever. So kind of unfortunate, but these things happen. At least it's not a mechanical thing. It's not his elbow or shoulder. And then the next day, speaking of shoulders, Fumiya Hojo was chasing down a foul ball, smashed his shoulder, his left shoulder against the wall, and injured it. So he probably won't be playing for a while. I remember in 2018, he dislocated his shoulder, and I believe it was his left shoulder. So if it's a re-aggravation, my understanding is once you do it once, you dislocate it once, it becomes that much easier to dislocate again and again.
Yeah, it becomes a bit habit forming. Yeah. That was the first time was on a diving play, if I recall, when he was in playing defense on his glove hand. Right?
Yeah. Yep. Against the Swallows. Yeah. Yeah. So hopefully he will be able to make it back at some point. But, you know, he's a guy that we may talk about a little bit later on as far as who's going to be on the out later on. I don't know if you're going to bring up his name, but we'll see. Anyways, before we recap the last 10 games of action, let's thank some of our proud patrons out there. As you know, H10 is on Patreon, and we are doing our best to supply a bunch of extra info and a bunch of extra good stuff for the loyal Hanshin Tigers fans out there. So first up, we've got the Tokyo Swallows, and we want to thank them only for their patronage, not for their performance on the field. Would you quit nipping at our tails here? Seriously, Swallows. But thank you, Tokyo Swallows, for your awesome podcast. I'm waiting for the next episode to come out because I don't think you've had one since the end of July. So let's make it happen. Anita, who is just down the road from me and was on the latest H10 viewing party, I want to thank her for her patronage. You know what? We've been picking some real bummers of games for these viewing parties. We had another blowout loss, but it's just good times to talk anyway. So thanks for joining that one, Anita. Zorni, the graphic designer and the Koshien Tour patron. Man, you're coming to Japan soon. I promise you, Japan is getting better as far as COVID. They're going to open up. Could you please come to a Japan series game with me, Zorni? That would be the best. I also want to thank Ian Hadel, who's on the digital platform. I want to thank Paolo in Kobe and Joe, who's out in Wakayama. It's thanks to you guys that this podcast is possible. So thank you. And man, every time that we do these recaps, every time we do the predictions, we talk about how important it is for our team to go 8-5 or 7-4, or, you know, we need to gain momentum. And it just seems like we're sputtering, man. We're not slumping, which is good news, but we're certainly not getting it done the way that we would like to. And Sanjay, we talked about winning 2 out of 3 against the Swallows. We were kind of lucky to win 1 out of 3 in this series.
No kidding. Yeah.
Not much to talk about here, but, you know, like when you look at run differentials in the standings, if you look at that kind of stuff, the Tigers don't look too good anymore. And it's mostly thanks to this series, because we lost the first game 12-0. I believe this one was, who was on the mound for us in this one? I'm sorry, I forgot.
Do I have to relive that? Let's not.
No, okay. So they had 26 guys reach base anyways in total, and we had 3 all night. So that was terrible. I think Okugawa was their pitcher on this night, and he was really, really good. We just really struggled to even get to second base. I don't think anyone did. So there you go. And every single one of our pitchers got lit up. The next day, fortunately, we won 5-3. So first of all, Murakami for them got a really lucky double. It was a check swing, and it just went down the third base line just past Oyama. So that set up a 2-run second inning for them. Their pitcher got an RBI out of that. That was, I believe, Ogawa. And then in the bottom of the second, we had the bases loaded with no outs. We got 1 run on an Itoi grounder. And that was it. That was all we got out of that. And then Yamada hit a solo home run in the top of the third. Things were looking grim until Rojas came in the bottom of the fifth and pinch hit for our pitcher, hit a game-tying home run. And then Oyama hit a game-winning or a go-ahead home run in the bottom of the sixth. So Ippei Ogawa gets his first career win, and the relievers were stellar in this one. 4 innings pitched and no runs against. Things looking good, except the very next day, man, I was probably as excited as anybody else because this was Haruto Takahashi's 2021 debut. But man, what a rough debut it was. He gave up 5 runs in that first inning. Gave up 1 more later in the game, but only went 4 innings. And even though the Tigers got back 3 runs in the middle inning, so it was 6-3, and it looked like, you know what, it's the Swallows, and their pitching is pretty weak, so anything could happen. But Fujinami came in and walked us to death. And then Iwasada came in and, you know, added on to that. And so I think he allowed 5 runs and Fujinami allowed 3 runs or 2. I don't know. I forget. 13-3 loss. Bottom line. So yeah, as I said, like in those 2 losses, we went -22 in run differential. So that's huge right there.
Ouch.
It seems like the trend lately is we get blown out and then we win by a run or two. And this continues later in this series, in this recap as well, the Fortnite recap. So let's go to Hiroshima, where we got swept the last time around, and let's sweep them. It's only a 2-game series, but we win 4-1 and 4-1. This is the first time Hanshin got scored first in a game in the last 10, but we did it. But they tied it up in the bottom of the first. Then Sans comes in, pinch hit RBI single, and Nakano with an RBI single in the top of the sixth. Chikamoto with an RBI single in the top of the eighth. So we win 4-1. Again, four relievers, each one with a clean inning. Suarez with his 30th save. We stopped Seiya Suzuki's home run streak at 6 games, which is nice because if he'd hit that 7th straight game, it would have tied a record that's held by Randy Bass. Thank you, Hanshin pitchers, for coming through.
Thank you.
I was scared. I really thought this was it, that Seiya was going to get his name in the history books. He's in the Hiroshima Carp club history record book for that. Congratulations, and go to the majors, please. But that's it. All right. So the next day, again, we win 4-1, as I said. Marte with a 3-run home run in the top of the sixth. And that actually opened the scoring because Akiyama was outstanding in this one. No hits allowed through 6 innings. And so that 3-run blast was huge. And unfortunately for Akiyama, he gave up 1 hit, which was a home run on a really bad, it wasn't even a bad pitch from the pitcher's perspective, right? Like, it was a ball, but Nishikawa is just that kind of hitter. So Nishikawa hit it out of the park. And then Rojas added an RBI single later for the 4-1 final. Nice to sweep that. We come home to face the Bay Stars for a single game. No, not home. Well, depends what you call Yokohama Stadium. It wasn't our typical home park. But this is a place where we tend to excel, and we did not. I kind of predicted it was going to be a tough game because being in Hiroshima on Saturday and having to be in Yokohama on Sunday, not easy for anybody. Facing Imanaga, not easy for anybody. And we got shredded. So Gunkel served up a couple of home runs. Baba served up a home run. And so we got the first run of the game, I believe, but that was it. So it was an 8-1 loss. As I said, blowout loss and narrow victories. Hey, it happens. Okay, so we get a day off, and now we're hosting the Swallows for a couple. And again, we lost 2 out of 3 last time. We're not hosting. I don't know why I keep thinking we're at home. We were at Jingu for this.
Yes.
But we lost 2 of 3 at home, so we're hoping to kind of pay them back for that, and we were unable to do so. We actually had tons of chances in this game with runners in scoring position through the 2nd through 5th innings, got nothing in those innings. Aoyagi and the relievers gave up single runs in the 2nd, 4th, 6th, and 8th, but Marte saved our bacon with a 3-run home run in the top of the 9th. And Suarez came in for the save that doesn't count as a save because it was a tie game, 4-4. We've got 5 ties on the season, 3 of them against the Swallows.
That's crazy too. But man, how huge was that Marte bomb? Oh man, that was as good as a win, man. It was as good as a win.
Seriously, it really was. Yeah. And like, I don't know. I hate to say it, but I've never really liked Scott McGuff. I mean, I like the fact that he blew that one pick off against us last season, was it? And I just know last season he was awesome against the Tigers and terrible against everyone else. And I think that's why I don't like him. Like, why can't you suck against us too? So it was nice to see us get that 3-run home run against him. Okay. So that tie being as good as a win means that another tie or win would be nice. But unfortunately, we had a really tight game in the finisher of this series. 2-game series. It was just a 1-run, and it came in the bottom of the first, and it came on a Murakami bloop RBI single where he really got jammed. I mean, the pitcher kind of won that matchup. It just happened to fall. It happened to drop in no man's land, and that was their 1-run. Well, we got the leadoff runner on in innings 1 through 4 and got nothing out of them. We also had a couple of bases loaded situations for our dear friend Jerry Sands, and unfortunately, man, that guy is slumping. And so we got no runs, 1-0 loss. So now we've got should have had 3 home games to end off this recap, but one of them got rained out or typhooned out. And so we're looking for Haruto Takahashi to atone for his kind of rough start last time out against the Dragons this time at home. man, did he ever do it. He was outstanding. He struck out 10 in his 7 innings of work, allowed just 2 hits, walked none, which means that they really were not threatening at all in this game. Unfortunately, we were up against Yudai Ono, which is always tough. But the good news is that Itohara in the bottom of the 6th brought home Chikamoto on his 3rd hit of the game. He was one of the few guys that had Ono's number. But that was it. And that was enough because Iwasaki and Suarez, even though they both let runners on base, they did not let any of them cross home. And that's all that matters.
Yay. And you know what? There were some people saying that they should have let Takahashi go longer. But I'm like, yeah, you got to be kidding. The guy is just coming off of, you know, a year off, basically. And, yeah, you know, he's gone, what, he had 85 pitches or something? It's like, that's enough. He's done more than done his job. So give the kid a rest and let the others close it out.
Yeah. And I mean, save him for the next series, which I'm assuming he's going to be pitching against the Giants at Tokyo Dome. Make sure that he has got make sure that tank is full, right?
Yeah.
And speaking of the Giants, the final game of the recap, man, I don't know. I just get depressed thinking about this one because this was the viewing party day and we got our first run, Chikamoto with a double, and then he was bunted over to third, and then he came home on an Itohara single, which is kind of nice. So we got the 1-0 lead, but the top of the 2nd was where it all fell apart real fast. They got a couple of quick hits, so it was one out with runners on 2nd and 3rd, and this was the sore spot for me. And it is for a lot of fans. I just feel like early in games, we don't need to draw in this. Cue the Yano music, please.
Was that on purpose? Pull the whole outfield? Yano? Who's that? I've never heard of him before. Who is that? Yano?
Thank you. We don't need to draw in the infield so early in games. And especially in this situation, we've got their number 8 batter up. And granted, it is Oshiro, so he is a good hitter. But this is the scenario as I see it playing out. Joe Gunkel is a ground ball pitcher, right? So if the infield is not drawn in, most teams, seriously, in NPB, they're thinking, okay, you know what? We can get the one run. We just have to hit the ball on the ground and we'll get the run. And most of them are happy to do that. So my assumption, you've got a team that would be happy to hit a ground ball against a pitcher that typically, you know, induces ground balls. Let them score the one run, get the out at first. You've got 2 outs now and the pitcher coming up with a runner on 3rd. Okay, so you're probably getting out of that inning 1-1. So what? He let 2 guys on early. Like that's, as they always say on the play-by-play, that's shoganai, man. You can't do anything about that. Just let it be. No, we draw in the infield and Oshiro hits one to the exact guy that has like a UZR of -9.3 on the year, I think, Itohara, who probably could have gotten to it, but didn't. So it did get past him. 2-1 now. Runners on 1st and 2nd. 1st and 1st. Just 1st. Yeah. Just 1st. 1 out. Sugano up. Bunt. Gunkel throws it away. 3-run home run. Gunkel gives up another hit. 2-run home run, and now it is 7-1 instead of 1-1 at the end of this inning. So Yano-san, can you save the drawn-in infield for desperate situations and not like top of the 2nd when there's still, we've got 8 innings of batting to get that one run? God, I don't know. I just feel like it's high risk in a 2nd inning of a game. There's no need to play that risk game. Even against Sugano, even if you're facing like freaking Jacob deGrom or like, you know what I mean? Even if a major league pitcher came in.
Totally agree. And also that I've read a couple of, you know, well-known baseball minds commenting on this and saying that it's one thing for the Giants to do that as the team that's behind in the standings, needing to be aggressive and make things happen. And on the road. It's another for the team that's ahead. That should be saying, hey, I'm going to play my game, my way, and you know, you guys come and try and take it from me. A separate guy was just saying that the a lot of times players take their cue from the manager, and how the manager manages things will influence their mindset for the game.
Yeah.
And what Yano might have done was trying to go head-to-head against Hara in his defensive scheme. But at the same time, he's made his players become more nervous because, like, oh, this one run is really important and we got to save it. And, you know, it had all the negative connotations afterwards.
My take on that as well, and I took this to Twitter. I actually took it straight to Kyuji Fujikawa, and I did get a reply out of him, but I also got some negative replies from the rest of the world out there. I said, this, like, if I were Gunkel, okay, and I'm not, so I'm not saying this on his behalf. I'm saying this from T-Ray, who, you know, played T-ball. That's about all I did. but if I were Gunkel in that situation and I saw my manager saying, look, I know that we either score or we either give up no runs or we're screwed, I wouldn't enjoy being in that situation in the second. Like, the manager is putting that extra pressure on you as well, that not only do you have to induce a grounder here, but a soft grounder that, or something that's going to happen to go directly to one of the players. So if I'm Gunkel, and again, I'm mentally weak, I'm not a pro ball player, and he should be stronger than me and probably is, but I would have been probably upset about the decision, upset that it got past Itohara. And then when Sugano bunted, I probably would have still been a little bit frazzled and thrown the ball away, which is what happened. And then I would have probably tried a little bit too hard to put extra mustard on all my pitches. One or two of them might have gone over the plate and I might have given up a couple home runs. Oh, guess what happened? Right. So I kind of feel like if that were me, that would have been my mental state and the same thing would have happened. And of course, the pitcher's got to do the pitcher's job. So he can't say, well, if it weren't for the manager, I would have gotten out of this. But I can say it because I'm not the pitcher. But, yeah, that really upset me. It was a terrible way to end this fortnight. So here's the deal. We're a game and a half up on the Swallows, and we kind of have the Carp to thank for that in a way because they tied the Swallows last night, which means they couldn't creep to within a game. And here's the other situation. Another sore spot with me that I've brought up on social media and in daily sports that got bashed by Japanese readership. Shame on you guys, because in a month you're going to be agreeing with me. But these ties, bro, we're a game and a half up on the Swallows. But by season's end, if we just keep exchanging wins and losses and they are only a game behind us at the end, their win percentage is possibly going to be higher, which means this game and a half lead is actually a half game lead.
Yeah, that's crazy, man. That's wrong.
And we're 2.5 up on the Giants, but essentially it's a game and a half up on the Giants. So we are getting like we're really, really walking on very thin ice right now. And we've got to start winning games. So every time that we're predicting, my friend, we're always saying, well, it'd be nice if they go 8-5. Well, yeah, they really need to do that or better moving forward. Yeah. Like the rest of the season, they need to play at least, I would say, like 620 ball the rest of the way. And I haven't done the math, but they do need to win a lot more than they lose. They can't just keep exchanging wins and losses the rest of the way.
Yeah, you're right, unfortunately.
It'd be nice if we still had the 8-game lead that we had back at the end of Interleague, or after one game of beating the Giants after Interleague. It was 8 games, man.
Yeah.
But that is all but gone. But anyways, we're still in first, and the season still goes on. And you know what I mean? There's still plenty of time for the Tigers to turn this around. The Giants aren't exactly playing good baseball either. And the Swallows are, but as you pointed out to me, they are crushing the other three weak teams, but they are pretty bad against us and the Giants.
Yeah, that's true. And to even worse than that is those three teams that they are crushing, we only have a 2-win margin over on all three of them. So it's like, why are they helping out the Swallows and just giving us such a short shrift?
Yeah, you know, like they've really come around though on the Giants, because like the Dragons have pulled off a couple of good, you know, key wins against the Giants. The Bay Stars, after being terrible against them in the first half, are crushing the Giants now. So, you know, they're doing pretty good for us against them. But let's start doing it against the Birds, please.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get into the hot topic. Hanshin Tigers English News. Hanshin Tigers English News. Hanshin Tigers English News. Hanshin Tigers English. So I saved this from the rumors and news because I knew that it tied directly into the hot topic. Two guys have announced their retirements from the Hanshin Tigers at season's end, actually from pro baseball. And those two guys haven't factored into anything this season and really haven't factored into much for the past two seasons for that matter. And those would be Shunsuke, our outfielder number 68, who is now 34 years old. I don't know when Father Time crept up on him, but I didn't realize he was that old already. And then also Kentaro Kuwahara, who was named the outstanding middle reliever of the CL in 2017. I think he's also like 35 years old or so, but he also announced his retirement fairly recently. So these two guys are going to be gone. And of course, they're going to be missed. Do you have, first of all, let's talk a little bit about memories of these two guys. Do you have any particular memories of Shunsuke or Kuwahara?
Well, actually, nothing that jumps right out the mind for Shunsuke, except for what he pointed out in the article that I just read, where he hit his first pro home run on his birthday back in 2010. And that was really special for him. And I can say, yeah, no kidding, right?
Yeah, for real.
And for Kuwahara, though, just the workhorse that he was in 2017 when he just, what, he pitched 60-something games. And, you know, at the end, the article that I read today said that there was just too much fatigue, built up fatigue in his arm, and he didn't have it anymore. And, you know, that's kind of par for the course for pitchers in Japan, right? Overuse early on.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, it is really unfortunate that his... You know, his career would seem to be just taking off, even though he was like 30 when he had that great year, or he was around that age. It still just seemed like, you know, this is a guy who was kind of a late bloomer and finally came into his own, found this role that was unique to him, found this pitch that was unique to him. Because his slider, man, he had a slider, and then he had something that they either called it the Masura, which is a mix of a Masugu and a Suraida. Like the fastball and slider, kind of a middle one. So like a quick biting slider, or sometimes they call it a suratta, which would be like a slutter, which doesn't sound
slider cutter
at all. Yeah. But that was a mix, of course, between a slider and a cutter. But he had these pitches, man, that they bent in ways that other pitchers could not bend their pitches. And just, I mean, it looked really cool. It was fun to watch him pitch, just because when you saw that movement on that pitch and you saw guys looking foolish on them, yeah, that was something special. So 2017, yeah, he had a 1.51 ERA in 67 mounds with 39 holds, which is pretty impressive. And then in 2018, also, he was fairly good with a 2.68 ERA in 62 mounds and 32 hold points. And he averaged 10.26 Ks per nine that season. So those were really, I mean, that's the pinnacle of his career. Because 2019, 2020, he had quite limited time, playing time. And then this year, he has not played at all.
That's because he pitched every other day in 17 and 18.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, so his career numbers, 235 mounds, and 129 of them came in those two seasons, right? And again, we're talking about a guy who is turning 36 next month. So that is a ton of work to put in to such a short time. Now, as for Shunsuke, I was actually at a game where he hit, he had like a multi-hit, I think it was a three-hit game, including a home run at Koshien, and that was his first ever Koshien home run, if I'm not mistaken. And this is a guy that I always thought, like, what is he there for? He's useless, is what I kind of, that was how I felt about him for a long time. But then he just had that one really good season where it was like, oh, wait a minute. And I remember the next season, him saying like, yeah, I'm, you know what, I'm going after that starting position in center or in whatever. And that was the year. So I think 2017 was his great year. And then 2018, which was the year before Chikamoto, was the year that he was like, yeah, I'm going for it. And then he didn't get it. So, and again, when we talk great year, it's not like he was, you know, all-star, but he did bat 309 on the season in limited playing time. He had 191 at bats and a career high four home runs. But anyways, that year, I mean, his OPS was 801. He did look pretty good. It looked like he could possibly do something big the next season, but he didn't. He got about the same amount of playing time and then just fizzled after Chikamoto came in. There was like no more playing time left for Shunsuke. So
yeah,
I could see him. I could actually see both of them, but more so Shunsuke becoming a Tigers Academy coach, following along with like Uemoto and Imanari and Iwamoto and Yokoyama and a couple of these other guys that are there coaching the kids. It'd be great to see him there.
Yeah. Otsukare-sama to the both of them.
So we've got these two guys that have announced their retirement from the game. And the question that begs to be asked is there another retirement announcement coming in the days ahead? And it is entirely possible. I've got three guys. And, you know, of course, we've got to only, well, primarily talk about older guys, if you will, because if they're under 30, you'd presume that they're probably not going to announce a retirement. They may end up getting cut, but they probably want to keep playing. So I've got three guys that could possibly And one of them, I hate to say this because he is on the top squad, but Yoshio Itoi, he reached his 300 career steal plateau. He is 40 years old. He's being used in very limited situations. And I kind of feel like if the Tigers win the pennant this year, that might be the best way for him to ride off into the sunset. I'm worried, and we can talk about this at the end of the year when we do win the pennant, but I'm worried that, you know, when teams win the pennant, they get this whole like kind of softy feel about the team. Like, oh, this is the team that brought us the championship and we can't let anyone go, or it would be heartless to cut this guy because he hit that key home run back in June or whatever it might be. Right. But I kind of feel like Itoi doesn't really have a place on the team anymore. And I feel like he could just call it a career and a happy one, especially if the Tigers end this season the way we want them to.
Yeah, I have no arguments with that one. Yeah, it would be a perfect finale to, you know, let him ride off into the sunset, as you say.
Right. The other two, well, I'm not sure what's going on with Chen, of course. If he's having this big of shoulder problems at age 35, 36, he may call it quits. I'm not going to necessarily make any predictions on that, but it's a possibility that we need to be ready for. But a couple of other pitchers that are up there in age that have spent nearly the entire season on the farm, those would be Kenichi Nakata and Minoru Iwata. I'm not saying they have nothing left in the tank, but if I were that age, I don't know if I would want to spend another year down on the farm and doing all these trips off to remote stadiums and not being in front of a bunch of fans, not having a huge salary doing this, and not really having great prospects of getting up to the top squad again. I mean, if either of these guys, and so let's make this clear, then Nakata is 39 years old. So next year will be his age 40 season. And he doesn't really have that great attachment to the Tigers or their fans or the organization. I just don't see him sticking around and playing some more, especially if he's just going to be a farm boy, Oji-san. Yeah. And then Iwata has been with the Tigers since 2006. So he is definitely a veteran of the team and very well respected and appreciated, but he's turning 38 next month. And he has been called up just for a very short spell this year out of the bullpen. I think his days as a starter are done and the team doesn't really see him as a viable option in the bullpen. Cause if they did, he'd probably be on the top squad right now. And I kind of feel like it might be the end for him as well.
He might transition into a nice coaching type of role, I think.
Kind of like Ando did and Fukuhara did.
Yeah, I think so.
I could see that. Yeah. Okay, my man. Well, let's get into the meat and potatoes. That was just the appetizer right there. But who do you think might get cut from this team? And I've got some juicy names. I've got some names that are fairly predictable, but I've got a couple of juicy names as well. I think it'll be fun to kind of chomp on these a little bit, but I'll let you go first. We'll go one. We'll each get a shot and then we can comment on each other's thoughts.
Wait, we're talking cut right now, right?
Cut.
Not traded.
Not trade. Cut.
Okay. Ooh. You go first.
Okay, then I will. this is a guy. So I'm going to start with a juicy one just for fun.
Yeah.
This is a guy who's still just 30 years old, and he has made an impact somewhat through the years. But he always seems to be the last guy on the bench or the last guy on that chopping block. And I just feel like, man, maybe this is the year that finally the team says, you're not who we hoped you'd be. And we've got to make room for some new draftees. And I'm sorry, Naomasa Yokawa, you're gone.
Ooh.
What do you think?
That's a juicy one, especially because it was just the other day, right? That he was brought up and started.
Yes. So in past years, he's kind of had similar situations where he's been brought up at the end of seasons to start. And I know that like he's had a couple of really good productive, I wouldn't even say really good. He's had some semi-productive seasons in limited playing time, like 2018, his OPS was 723. He had 6 home runs and 48 RBI. Again, that's not full-time. So 48 RBI in a somewhat part-time role is not bad. And then last year, he had 8 home runs. And again, this is in a shortened season and also limited playing time with 24 RBI and a 770 OPS. But I'm looking at other years like 2019. What was the guy doing? He batted 109 with an OPS of 460. 2017, His OPS was 544, and 2016 it was 471. This is a guy with, that was our third round pick in 2013, and you know, he does have that versatility going for him, if you will, because he's a natural third baseman, but he also plays first and he plays the corner outfield positions. But I don't think he's an excellent defender. I don't think that he is necessarily the answer as a starter at any point, maybe even as a pinch hitter. I don't know if just that one at bat is his thing or not. I think it might have been in 2018 to an extent. But yeah, like I said, like I think 2019 when he batted 109, I think he was batting like 070-ish with like four games left, or, you know, eight games left. And then he came in and like tore things up to get up to 109, and that kept him around. But I really feel like the writing's on the wall for him. So those are just my thoughts on Yokawa.
Yeah, that's a juicy one for sure.
Anyone you want to lay on the chopping block here, or should I go again?
Well, I have one, but I'm not sure that it's certainly not as juicy as Yokawa. But, you know, I was looking at the old numbers 57 and 58 on the roster, Nagasaka and Araki. That, you know, maybe their useful shelf life has passed and there are others that are like them or better than them and, you know, coming up that are younger.
So with Nagasaka, I'm going to disagree somewhat for a couple of reasons. One, it does take catchers a little bit longer to mature into the players that they end up being. Case in point, Yano-san, who I think really just started getting good at age 30. Nagasaka is just 27. And he's also a warm body on the farm. We do need catchers. It's, you know, it's important to probably have at least three on the top squad and three on the farm. And right now we only have seven catchers. So if you account for one being injured, we kind of need him around. And just with him being only 27, I feel like he could stick around, but I do have Araki on my list as well. So I'm with you on that. He is having a great year on the farm, but he is also 33. He'll be 34 near the start of next season. And one of his sales points is his speed. But when you're 34, that speed is usually not something that you can use as a powerful weapon in games anymore. So I could definitely see him being chopped. So I'll agree with you on that. Well, then allow me to go next. And I'm going to go with a really simple one. This is kind of low-hanging fruit, but it is a development player who was a pitcher and was converted to an infielder. And that would be Kosuke Fujitani, who I believe now is in his third season as an infielder and has gotten very little playing time. And I know that he was injured, I think, when we drafted him, or he got injured during indie league ball before we drafted him or something. And I think he spent a lot of this year injured, but it just seems like he's injury prone and he's maybe not ready to take that step, that leap to being a star fielder. There's not much of a commitment to a development player as far as the finances go, but if you want to really develop him and if you're serious about him becoming a star, you got to give him a ton of playing time. And I just feel like we can't really afford that down on the farm, even because we've got a lot of other guys that we want to push into the top squad that have the talent. So maybe it's time to say goodbye to Fujitani.
I wonder if some of the farm players, the marginal ones, are going to be negatively affected by the fact that we're in a pennant race on the farm in the farm Western League, and that they're actually not as intent on getting in playing time as they might be if they weren't in the pennant race. It's right, kind of weird.
Yeah. Well, and with only six games left in their season, yeah. I mean, and then the quote unquote playoffs on the farm is just one game. It's the winner of the Western against the winner of the Eastern, which it looks like it's going to be Lotte. So that's kind of interesting, right? Because they're leading the Pacific as well.
Yeah.
But anyhow, I don't know that there's any... I think certainly at this stage of the season, Hirata is not looking to give equal playing time to guys. He's looking to win this thing out, right? Whereas I think for maybe the first 100 or so games of the season, that wasn't necessarily the case. Okay. Do you want me to give you some more juice here?
Sure.
Haiga Egoshi.
Ooh.
Yeah, he's been on the top squad a few times this year, and he's been a fairly regular occupant of the bench. And, you know, he's been a pinch runner. He's been a defensive replacement, and he is definitely serviceable. But what I've seen in especially 2021 is that we have just got a glut of other guys that can do the same thing that we've been calling in, right? We've got Kai Ueda. We've got Kairi Shimada. We've got
Kumagai.
Well, Obata's coming in that situation as well. Give me another name. I know there's at least one Kumagai more that I'm forgetting.
Kumagai.
Thank you very much. Kumagai is also kind of fits that same mold. And then, I feel like, okay, so Kumagai and even Ueda and Shimada, they can play the outfield and they're maybe not quite as good at it as Egoshi, but I still feel like maybe it's time for Egoshi, who is going to be, he'll be turning 29 in March. So before the start of next season, and he's still not getting at bats because he's still not a good batter, although he is kind of heating up on the farm. So I don't know, maybe I'm being a bit too harsh.
He was a guy that I had on the trading block.
Oh, we're not ready for trades yet, because I got three pitchers that I want to cut.
Yep, fine, go for it. I'm saying that Egoshi was on my list for there.
Oh, sorry, I misunderstood you there. Okay, yeah. Okay, so he's. I just don't know if he's worthy of a trade. I don't know if anyone would want to give us anything harsh. Back. Well, it is, but at the same time, honestly, like, what would we get back that would be serviceable for our team? Because I don't know if there's anyone on another team that they would say, well, this guy's really good, but Egoshi's better, right? Like, I mean, the other team has to feel like they're getting the better end of the deal. And I just don't know that there's anybody that they could give us that would make them feel like they won the trade and that we would feel like we wanted.
Right? Yeah.
Because I think we kind of overvalue Egoshi probably more than other teams do.
So, quite possible.
Yeah. So three pitchers. I don't know if you have any on your list, but the first one that I have on mine is actually a guy that we got this year, and that would be Akira Niho. I haven't liked what I've seen from him at all. Like, even on the farm, I hate to bag on him even more, but he is the one that ended our winning streak down on the farm.
yes, he is.
Yeah. And he just has not really put it together at all for the Tigers this season. Just as far as putting together that start that shows like, hey, yeah, this is the guy that we can lean on to be our sixth starter, or this is the guy we can use in long relief. Like, he just has not really shown that. He is a 13-year veteran now, and he'll be 32 at the start of next, or near the start of next season. So I just kind of feel like it might be the end of the road for him.
Yeah, wasn't Niho sort of like a, you know, low-priced gamble, if you will, that, you know, sure, bring him in, give it a try. If it doesn't work out, you know, no big loss. That's kind of the way I felt.
Yeah.
And no, I don't have any other pitchers, so go for it.
Okay, so two more guys that, and these, again, are fairly easy picks just because they've been on the farm the whole year and they haven't necessarily done awesome on the farm either. They're also getting a little bit up there in age. So I'll go with the guy that's a little bit older first, and that would be Kazuo Ito, who has now been with the Tigers for 10 seasons and is going to be 32 this offseason. I couldn't even tell you what his career high is for mound appearances or for innings on the top squad, but it's somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 innings in a season. And he was the closer down on the farm, I think, in 2020 or 2019, but that's not the case anymore. And he might be hurt, but he's always hurt. And I just think that, you know what, like, we have been paying his grocery bill for a long time. Not you and I, of course, but it's just time to maybe let somebody else do that. And then the other one kind of saddens me in a way because he is the former student of one of my colleagues, and that would be Koki Moriya, who is turning 28 in a couple months' time. Has not made it to the top squad this season. Only had three appearances last year on the top squad, and they were terrible. He's really only put together one good season since he was drafted in 2014, and that was the 2019 season in which his ERA was 3. But he also had those domestic troubles, and that's not a reason to cut a guy. But I don't know, like, he hasn't used that hardship in his life to spring him to greater heights. It also maybe has not crushed him, but he really hasn't been able to make anything of his time with the Tigers. Now 7 seasons, and again, as I said, only one on the top squad as a regular.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and when you're making as many headlines for non-baseball matters, or maybe more headlines for non-baseball matters than for baseball, then it's not a good mix.
Right, exactly. So as you know, we've got to make room for the draft. And that's why we've got all of this talk of players that need to quit or need to be cut. It's a reality of the game, right? So yes. The last segment is who needs to be traded or who could we trade? And you already mentioned Egosi as one. That's a possibility. I've got three guys on my list. And a couple of them are pretty obvious, but why don't you go first?
Well, the one that pains me to say is our former rookie of the year, you know, Shun Takayama. I loved him from the beginning, and I think he's still one of the most talented hitters out there. But he's just not finding playing time. And so it'll probably be a win-win if he went somewhere else and actually, you know, got some time.
That sounds just like a breakup line, bro. I loved you right from the start, and you've got all the talent in the world, but maybe you're just a better fit with somebody else.
It's not you, it's me.
Yeah, exactly. But except it is you, really. No, I've got Takayama on my list as well. This is a guy, I think he's batting like around 210 on the farm right now. And he's been on the farm all season. He doesn't stand out defensively, so he can't even use that as his call-up reason. And so his only call-up reason would be if he really swings the hot bat. It's not going to happen the rest of this season. And so he is probably going to end the year without a single top squad appearance. For some of you maybe less familiar with NPB, there's no expanded roster towards the end of the season. And so the roster size remains the same, which means he is going to be staying down there. You know, it's almost 100% guarantee. Unless, as we said earlier, Onodera got sent down. If by some miracle they call up Takayama, but I just don't see that happening. Okay, I have got, of course, our dear friend Shintaro Fujinami on my trading block. How many more times can we call him up, have great hopes, have him dash them, send him back down, have him impress us and wow us again, and repeat the cycle? You know what I mean? Yeah, lather, rinse, repeat. It's just like, no. It is time for him to fly, spread his wings and fly somewhere else. And I really think he can do it. I think the whole league knows, you know, even though he has aged a lot since he started struggling with us, what I mean by that is he is, what, 27 years old right now? He is 27, but he has been struggling pretty much since he was 22. It's been a long, long struggle for him. But he's still, you know what I mean? Like at age 27, he's still got a number of years ahead of him. And the whole league knows that he is just grossly talented.
Well, so, your first phrase also sounded like a breakup line, right? You know, go and spread your wings, right? Yeah. If you love something, set it free, right? Yeah, that one.
This basically, I don't know, maybe that's the title for today's episode is like breakup lines for Tigers. I don't know. So do you got anyone else on the trading block that you think we should try to parlay into an acquisition of some sort?
Not at the moment.
Okay. Well, I've got an unpopular one. And that would be Haraguchi. And I've talked about it on the show in the past before. And I just feel like he is kind of wasting away as a Tiger. I think there are a few teams that are looking for catchers. And he has always wanted to be a catcher. And since we're using an import at first base anyways, he's not going to get a ton of time there. He's not getting a ton being only, what, like a year younger than Umeno. He's not getting a bunch of playing time at catcher or any chances. And with Sakamoto being a year younger than him, he's just kind of stuck in no man's land, but he's too good. And I just feel like the one at bat a game as a pinch hitter, it's not working for him as much anymore. It's not something that, like, I don't think that his wins above replacement or hits above replacement or whatever you want to call it, I don't think it's worth hanging on to him and suppressing him from being who he can be. Again, it's the, if you love someone, set him free. And I do love Haraguchi. I don't know. Maybe we can get something for him and maybe it's time to trade him.
Ooh, that one cuts close to the heart.
Yes, I know he's a fan favorite and he has gone through a ton. But, you know, maybe this is just the chance for him to start a new chapter and really turn this into the greatest ending ever. Because right now, I don't feel like it's heading that way.
Fair enough.
So there you have it. It will be interesting to see who sticks around and who doesn't. We did not name Hojo during this time. As I'd said early in the show, we might. He is a guy that may end up getting chopped next year, as well as guys like Mochizuki, Yamamoto, Kinami. I could go on and on. There's guys that are definitely not fitting the bill, not living up to their expectations, but we want to give them a bit more chance as youth and definitely as protection against injuries and stuff like that.
What's going to happen? What's the record going to be? What's going to happen? What's the record going to be? What's going to happen? What's the record going to be? What's going to happen? What's the record going to be?
See the future? Yes, they can. Check it out. HD. H10 prediction. See the future? Yes, they can. Check it out. H10 prediction.
What's going to happen with the record?
All right. Well, let's get into the predictions segment of the show. My friend, we are down to what, 29 games now left in this season. So we're going to try to predict the next, we'll say 15 games, although we should be back before then. We've got three at Vantolin Dome where we're expected to lose. We've got three at Tokyo Dome where we're expected to lose. And then we've got three at home against the Carp, three at home against the Dragons, and then three on the road against the Bay Stars. Amazing at this time of year that we are playing full, quote unquote, full three-game series is this many in a row, but that's the way it is right now. Any thoughts on this upcoming week of six domed games? There will be no rainouts, but we're playing at ballparks that we typically don't do well.
Well, so despite what we were saying earlier about the need to play 620 ball, I think that if we get away with 500 ball for those six games, then we have to be okay with it.
Yeah, that's the bare minimum, but I honestly think that we need to do one better. We need to step up in both. And this is, again, there's no grounds for this saying that we're going to go 4-2 or that anything like that. But we need to make that statement that we're a better team than we've been lately, and that Vantolin Dome doesn't scare us, and that the Giants don't scare us. Now, can that happen? I don't know. I mean, we're going to be facing Yanagi tonight, which will be a tough win. And then the next two, I mean, it's just tough wins because it's Vantolin. And then we've got three against the Giants, and we'll be facing Sugano and probably at least one other pitcher we hate, although don't we hate all their pitchers? So it will be tough, but I'm saying they need to go 4-2. If they do go 3-3, I won't stop being a fan. Okay. And then so against the Carp and Dragons at home the following week, any thoughts on that? I honestly, this one has to be a 4-2. If not better,
This one has to be a 4-2 for me as well.
It's two bottom feeding teams. The Dragons were showing signs of hope, but they are kind of back. I think they're on a 4-game losing streak right now. And of course, by then things could have changed, will have changed again, possibly. And then the Carp, they're just terrible against everybody. And Morishita pitched last night on a Monday night. I hope that they try to pitch him on a little bit of short rest and he gets the Sunday start. And then we don't have to face him on Tuesday of that week. So please make that happen.
That
and then
would work
we can
for me.
Do some serious damage against them. And then against the Bay Stars, that would be October 5th through 7th. I don't know when we're going to be back on the air, but it should be sometime in the middle of that series. But the Bay Stars currently in September have the best record in the CL. And I know it's going to be October by then and things may have changed. But I think that one, even though we're in Yokohama, we need to go 2-3 there. Honestly, we need to go 2-3 in all of these. That would be the ideal, right?
Well, yeah, that would give us that 667 winning percentage for the rest of the way.
Yep, for sure. All right. Well, I think that's about going to do it for this show. Thank you so much for tuning in to H10 Hanshin Tigers English News. If you have not gotten your fill of the Tigers and me and Sanjay, we have got Patreon. We have got the website, the Twitter, the Instagram, the Facebook, and I'm also starting a newsletter where I'm hoping to do a bit of language instruction. So I'll put the link in the show notes for that. Feel free to sign up for that as well. Everything is in the show notes, including a link to the song that we use for our theme. Thank you, Anwar Amer, for that theme music. And I don't have a link for show, but he is the show mixer, and I've got to thank him as well. Sanjay, thanks for being part of the podcast. Thanks for joining me for this episode.
Thanks for having me, and I hope that we will be having a much happier conversation the next time around.
You and me both. Let's go, Tigers!
Yep.